Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, Mets fans, and welcome to the Happy Recap Radio Show. For this Sunday, the 16th of July, 2017, we've passed the All-Star break. We've passed the halfway point. But by golly, EJ, as we start the show today, we have not passed the curse of Sundays.
It just gets worse and worse and worse. And it's just funny because on a weekend where, let's face it, we're both kind of geeks, and our inner geek could fly between the Disney World Convention, D23, the announcement of new Doctor on Doctor Who, and, of course, the premiere of Game of Thrones tonight. If there's ever been a weekend that it's been easy for me to kind of tune out in the background, it's a weekend where the Mets play three games. All three turn out to be blowouts. Two in favor of the Mets should be feeling good heading into Sunday. And, of course, Sunday comes around and the blowout gets reversed. It is just such an anomaly, this Sunday curse going on with this team right now. But I do confess that I have really been corner of the eye watching at most this entire weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I managed to keep an eye on the first two games a little bit, but I almost had to be dragged into them to an extent, in the sense of come in around the third or fourth inning just because of being on the West Coast. That's just part of the nature of the beast of being out here anyway sometimes. But the way the weekend ran, it certainly was full of distractions on the geeky front. I much like you, absolutely drooling at the sight of Star Wars Land. I'm not going to deny it. There were definitely moments of, I never thought I could have a physical attraction to a attraction, but Star Wars Land certainly did that for me. And then the announcement of the hotel in Orlando. I mean, that and amongst all the other different things about the films and stuff. The only thing that, of course, question, and we need to get Jared Diamond on this. That's who we should have had for this segment. But I'm not sure I'm buying Will Smith as the genie. That's the only problem I have with this weekend. But I'm sorry, Robin Williams, definitive. But nevertheless, that announcement, waking up, trying to track Wimbledon this morning, when I'm not really all that interested in tennis to begin with, and I'm certainly not interested at 7 o'clock in the morning local time. Although it makes an older man like me feel good when I hear Roger Federer's age and go, okay, that's good. I'm not as old as I think I am, but, to be able to, find that announcement from the BBC on Doctor Who. And then, yeah, you're right. Game of Thrones here. You know, the question is the slaughter level on Game of Thrones. Will it top what we saw on the field today? I'm not sure. I'm not sure George R. R. Martin could come up with a violent enough scenario to top really most of our Sunday games this year, quite frankly.
Yeah, it's been as brutal as the Red Wedding and more when it comes to both our injuries and the outcomes of our Sunday games. You're absolutely right. Although I did see, to catch up on today's game, I simply went on to our buddy Mark Carrick's Twitter feed. Because he always would send out a tweet whenever there was any type of score change. So that's how I was caught up. And at, I noticed that 12-4, they had an inside-the-park home run hit against them, which I simply said, well, that's something new for a Sunday.
Speaking of Mark Carrick, he is reporting that Chasen Bradford has been sent down and the return of Hansel Robles is upon us.
Oh, God. Remember when we were talking about reinforcements?
Reinforcements. I figured that we were getting, everything points to the next day or two, Josh Smoker coming back from his DL stint. He's certainly been doing fine in rehab, hanging out with Mr. Tebow down there in St. Lucie, and we'll talk a little bit about him later. But, we sent Robles down with a 6.23 ERA, and he manages to improve it out to a 5.79 at Las Vegas. Mind you, that is the PCL, so you could drop a run and a half off of it, but boy, you know, if you're going to get rid of two guys on the team, I'm not sure Bradford's the guy you send down right now, because, you know, you're really going to let Salas and Ramirez continue to have roster spots?
Ramirez having a roster spot still is just as perplexing as – I don't know if it's just simply because he was an in-season acquisition, so Sandy wants to be like, hey, look, something I did during the season is still here, but by no means should he be here. And, yeah, Salas is a complete disaster too. I mean, he can come out and look great for two straight games, and then he's going to give you a week of just absolute clunkers. But, I mean, from what I was reading about today's game, no matter who came out of that pen, it was almost like they were instantly just giving up two right away. So, I mean, this is – obviously, we've talked about the off-season goals. I mean, this bullpen just needs to be completely revamped. You don't even know if you're going to have Addison Reed here. We both have speculated on this show. We are not. So, I mean, you don't know what you're getting back with Familia. This bullpen, I mean, just needs to be kind of shaken by its ankles and completely revamped.
You know, the thing about it, too, is, again, it really comes down to, and, you know, this is not just an opinion I've had. This is a lot of, you know, a lot of people have made these things. It's that whole concept of not overpaying on relievers. So, I mean, you know, when the Mets didn't go out and spend a whole lot of money on their bullpen this year, I was actually fairly okay with it because, you know, you have the situation where, especially, I'll tell you the one thing I hate more than anything are three year or longer contracts on relievers. Not a fan of them because there's no middle relievers I can think of off the top of my head that are absolutely money for three straight years.
Yeah,
very, very few
of
them.
You never want to give a reliever a 3-year contract.
Two-year deals are fine.
Yeah, unless you're talking Mariano Rivera. If you've got a lights-out closer who's young, yeah, I can see it. But for middle relief guys, I agree. Although the one thing about them cheaping out on the bullpen this year that bothered me is the fact that, and moving forward next year, this is why I think they should be aggressive in bullpen spending, is at least for the next couple of years, you have a very manageable starting rotation if you could ever get them healthy from an economic standpoint. These are still young kids who haven't hit the big contract years. Yes, if you have any hope of keeping at least a portion of them together, it looks like you're going to be coming out of pocket for a significant sum of money, but that's not yet. That's down the road. When you look at what could possibly be happening with the offense next year, you can be potentially looking at a team that's got Dominic Smith, Ahmed Rosario, and TJ all in it, all not making a lot of money. Really, you're just going to have Cespedes as your true big-time money guy. You could have Conforto playing center. If you're not going to spend the money on the bullpen, where are you going to spend it, really? Because your pitching is going to kind of, barring health, your starters are going to be locked in for next year. Pretty much most of your fielders are going to be locked in for next year. So if you're going to have the money to spend, why not spend it on getting a complete 7th to 9th inning lockdown bullpen at this point? Like you said, not going too long on these deals because you're going to have to pay the starters eventually. But let's throw cash around, maybe a little extra cash than we needed to if you would have given a guy a long-term deal to get him in here for 2 years. I think the bullpen should definitely be heavily spent on in this offseason, and I definitely think Addison Reed should be a part of that.
Well, I think the reality of it is I think he's going to get closer money to be a closer. And even if the Mets offer more money than other teams, I think he's going to take that opportunity to be a closer somewhere. I just don't see a scenario where Addison Reed comes back, and I don't think it's necessarily completely a financial thing. I mean, you know, again, Addison Reed came to us a former closer. I think he wants to go back to closing. And, you know, unless you can deem that, you know what, Familia is expendable. You know, if in the last 2 months of the season there seemed to be some belief that perhaps Familia will come back before the end of the season, perhaps as early as mid-August. If you could decide something, you know, and kind of go, you know what, I think we'd rather go forward with Reed. You re-sign him and bring him back as your closer. I'm perfectly okay with that. I'm more than happy with him as a capable closer. But at the end of the day, you know, you still have Familia. The one nice thing is I think you're going to save a lot. Obviously, you've got the contracts that are coming off the books. One of the things we don't think about is how much money are the Mets saving by the fact that Matt Harvey has been either injured or crap this season?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, they're saving millions of dollars in arbitration dollars this offseason. Yeah, I'd like to see that reinvested. You've got Granderson coming off the books. You've got Walker coming off the books. You've got Jay Bruce likely coming off the books. You've got all these contracts. You also got the likelihood that, well, you're probably getting 75% of David Wright's money back again next year, because the odds of him playing a full season or even any of next season are reasonably small. So you look at some of these areas. I still think there's a better chance than not that Mike Moustakas is, I always fall over that name, I'll have to get used to it eventually, I'm sure, is our opening day third baseman. I think that's going to be an area they spend. I think it's very possible that TJ Rivera, as a result, is the opening day second baseman, because they're not going to want to spend too much. But the questions we've talked about in the offseason have to be, are you going to go out and get a legit center fielder, or are you going to go full on bore and convert Michael Conforto to an everyday center fielder? And in which case, what are you doing with right field? Are you going to try and retain Jay Bruce? Are you going to try and do something else with the position? Are you going to try and bring in a different free agent? Are you going to try and make a trade? You know, there are definite question marks. I think you can get away with a low-cost option behind the plate. I think you can get, you know, we've talked about Carson Kelly, the Cardinals prospect. Saw him playing the other day in the AAA All-Star game. And you've got different options within there to bring in as a low-cost option, which means, yes, you have money to spend on pitching. And the reality of it is, I mean, as much as I agree with you that we need lockdown 7th, 8th, and 9th guys, I would just like a good, solid bullpen. If that means you're giving a decent contract for, you know, $10 million over 2 years to a middle relief guy that's going to come in the 5th and 6th, you know, by all means do it, because let's face it, especially with the health issues that some of these guys have had, especially with the fact that, you know, even if Syndergaard comes back this year, he's going to be a 5-inning pitcher. The reality of it is you need a solid bullpen with this rotation, because some pitchers, more than any others, are not capable of going the distance that, say, a Jacob DeGrom goes. That's the big question. And I do think that at the tail end of it, yeah, you need a fifth starter that is an innings eater, veteran guy, much like Colon was, but preferably 10 or 15 years younger. I just feel like you need another starter. And so, I mean, you know, these are some of the holes this team has, but none of them prevent them from spending on the bullpen. There's a hell of a lot of money coming off the books this year.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't done the math yet, but if I have to guess based on what I assume next year, see, I'm not discounting the possibility of Asdrubal Cabrera still being here in some capacity next year. And I think you could actually be looking at next year, you're looking at a first base Dom Smith, a second base, third base combination between Cabrera, TJ Rivera, and Wilmer Flores. Obviously, you're going to have your shortstop of the future here by next year, hopefully. You got Cespedes in left, and then you'll have Conforto either in center or right. So really, to me, that leaves, I think about, I want to say somewhere between 50, that's $50 to $60 million of payroll that you would have right there, including the starters. So that's leaving you a lot of money to address one outfield position, which, like you said, possibly Bruce, or possibly going to get a traditional center fielder, catcher, bullpen, fifth starter. That is a ton of money that's going to be available to fill really only, well, I'll say it's only four roles, but obviously the bullpen is going to be more than just one guy. But that's still, even if you're only looking at a $100 million payroll, that's still leaving you $40 million to clean up the four big holes that you have in your roster. Would you get to all four? I don't know. Can you get to all four via free agency? I don't think so. I think you have to have some type of combination of free agency and trades just because of the quality of the free agency class. Yeah, it's nice to have $40 million, but when the biggest guy that would fit a need for you out there is only going to be worth about $5 a year, you're going to have to get a lot more creative. But still, I mean, as bad as the season's been, looking forward, if, and it's always the biggest if with this Mets team, if you could ever get these starters healthy, you could sink a ton of money into the few gaps that this team would have and really come back next year as a serious, serious contender, if not favorite, in the NL East.
Well, and you also have to look at it from the standpoint that coming into next year, you're looking at the potential last stand, at least in their current window, barring any major improvements for the Nationals. So, your window is beginning to open even further. As of course we mentioned, got slaughtered on the field today, and hopefully walking around without too much blood on his jersey is our good friend Michael Barron. Michael, how bad was it out there today?
De minimis. I'm just going to say it until someone corrects me on how to properly use it. De minimis. It was less than de minimis. How's that?
Somebody scored high on the FATs.
Yeah. No, I mean, way higher than I did. I'll tell you. I mean, but I'm going to use it the way I think it should be used because I think it sounds good. So.
Well, it's always good to have you on. Go ahead, EJ.
We'll just get into what we were just talking about a little bit, Michael. I mean, I don't know how many Sunday games you've been to, but is that vibe around this team, like, what the heck do we have to do to not get annihilated on a Sunday at home?
Well, sure. I don't think they walk around with that attitude. I sure hope they don't have that attitude because that's to be blunt, a loser mentality. So, that's not how they are. I don't think that they're even aware that they suck something awful on Sundays, but I'm sure, if someone in the media mentions it, they'll say, I didn't even know, but look, it just comes down to, it doesn't matter what day it is. It's any day ends in Y, the pitching is terrible. And today was just another example of it. And this time it was with Steven Matz, who, he was just awful. From where I was sitting, I couldn't see what exactly the problem was. I'm just going to assume it was location because the velocity looked good. But look, it's just another day where the vaunted starting pitching staff, coughed one up. And, they had to piece it together with a lackluster bullpen and, hence the 13-4 loss. I mean, it was just a very... today in particular was just so unenjoyable. It was just such a terrible, terrible game all around. And all their problems were on the forefront. Yeah, the bad starting pitching, the bad bullpen. There was some shoddy defense. I mean, inside the home park home run was just the icing on the cake to me, where everybody was just standing around watching. Today was all their problems rolled into one game. And, that's why, I keep saying, even if they put on a good showing, and they have been good over the last couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, but even if they, they come down the stretch of the trade deadline and they, they can win, 10 out of 12, I just don't think that's enough, because eventually they will regress off of such a good stretch, and you'll see more of what you saw again today, which was just not acceptable.
Well, I mean, I think that's for me with the, with this team, when I kind of I tend to be, as you know, Michael, one of the more patient fans out there, and I'm definitely not the jump to conclusions guy. But about a month ago, when we hit that stretch where we're going to LA and obviously facing DC in there and the Cubs, I pretty much deemed it the last stand of 2017. And if they played poorly, they were gone. It was done. It was over. Yeah. If they played well, they had a pulse. Much more than that, but they would have had a pulse.
Certainly didn't play well. So.
They certainly didn't play well, and I've considered them basically a dead in the water team. From that point forward, it's kind of hard at this point not to look to 2018. But I think the question that most Met fans are asking, and I know a lot of Met fans are asking you this question: what's the deal with Amed Rosario?
Well, I don't know. They keep trying to sell us all on he lacks plate discipline. They want him to have a more mature approach at the plate and blah, blah, blah. He's hitting .325 at AAA, and I'd call him up at this point. But, with that said, then they're also selling everyone on Jose Reyes' recent upswing. But, look, if you're declaring yourself sellers, which Sandy Alderson has done in public, he's now done it twice in public. He did it once in California and just did it again on Friday. The exceedingly well quote, which I'm also going to use. Unless they play exceedingly well, they're going to remain sellers. So if you're sellers, that means you're punting 2017. If you're punting 2017, there's no reason to keep riding the Jose Reyes wave. You know, whatever you think of him, like if the aim is towards the future, it's time to start thinking about Ahmed Rosario. There's less of the argument holds less water to keep him down once you declare 2017 a lost cause, which is pretty much what they've done. I mean, they're not. I don't think they're expecting to win 14 of the next 15 games to turn the season around. It's hard. They haven't played that well in a year, so there's no reason to think that that's going to happen now. So it will become time and very difficult to defend having Ahmed Rosario in the minors, you know, for too much longer.
My confusion about it is, I mean, Sandy said the other day that we're not calling up any of the kids from the minors until their major league piece has basically been sold off already. And when I look at this roster right now and I see guys who could potentially be moved, I see Duda, I see Bruce, I see Granderson, I see Addison Reed, and I see Neil Walker, and maybe Cabrera. I don't see any team that Sandy Alderson would place a call to right now and be like, hey, you want Jose Reyes? That would be like, yeah, no, we're good. We're good, Sandy. Thanks, though. So if you can only get Rosario here if Reyes is gone, then I don't see a scenario where Rosario gets here.
Did we lose Michael? Or did we lose me?
I believe we may have. Nope,
yes,
we did. Michael.
We lost Michael. Right. Okay, well, we'll keep it going until we get him back here, unless you so insulted him. No, just kidding.
That was a salient point by me, too, damn it.
Salient, de minimis. Oh man, this is Big Word Sunday here on the Happy Recap.
This is what happens when we all spend the morning watching the BBC.
That's exactly what happens. And there we go with Michael rejoining us. Clearly, you didn't insult him, so we're all good there.
Yeah, to my point, Michael. We lost him again. I don't see a scenario where Reyes is ever gone. So if Reyes
EJ,
is ever
we,
gone,
we lost
how
him
does
again.
Rosario ever get here? Did we really?
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Anyways, Michael's having
right.
a little bit of cell phone
I think we're having
times.
A little cell phone issues with Michael. Michael, are you there now?
I'm back. I'm sorry. I don't know what
All
happened.
Right.
No worries.
Well,
so,
to my earlier point, if Sandy says you can't bring up the reinforcements, these young kids, until their major league counterpart is sold off, and Reyes never gets sold off, the only scenario I see for ever getting Rosario here is if Reyes is permanently your third baseman.
Well, yes, but I think there's a scenario that would get Rosario here and have, like you said, Reyes at another position or just on the bench. And look, you know, whatever, I think Reyes has been great for the last 3 weeks, but again, it gets back to what I said. If they're punting, the aim has to be towards the future. Jose Reyes is not a part of that future. And you know, Rosario should then get an extended look, much like, and I don't think Jose Reyes should be at another position because that other position would be third base. And quite frankly, they need to reserve third base right now for TJ Rivera to see if he can actually build up the arm strength, the arm accuracy, and become a steady force there. Because if he can prove that he's a third base, that he can play third base over an extended period of time, that solves a lot of problems for them going into next year, because that means they can exercise the option on Asdrubal Cabrera, and the infield is at least set at the top of the depth chart. And then they can focus their money on what they really need, which is a bullpen, probably a center fielder, more depth, and potentially one or two starting pitchers. You know, that $60 million coming off the books can go pretty quick, especially if you have to buy starting pitching. So, you know, I think TJ playing third is a big deal, and, you know, hoping that he can actually work out there.
Well, one of the things too that you know, I think we've got a couple guys out there that you know, not necessarily on the beat so much as like to write about this team, that maybe they like to stir the pot a little bit, suggesting with Ahmed Rosario that perhaps the clubhouse chemistry, if you will, is the reason for his lack of call up. I mean, do you get any sense whatsoever from the people that you talk to that there is a clubhouse chemistry issue with this team?
Well, I think you can certainly look back towards Asdrubal Cabrera asking for a trade when they shifted him to second base and realize that there could, you know, be a little bit of a rift in there. I mean, I know that a lot of players weren't happy with that that public request to be moved. It certainly didn't show that Asdrubal's head was in the right place. But, you know, in all honesty, when things are going well, clubhouse chemistry isn't a problem. When things are going poorly, clubhouse chemistry is usually a problem. So I'm not surprised by – I certainly wasn't surprised by Azrubel's public stance that he took, because, you know, A, the direction of the team, B, you know, what usually happens when teams stink. And, you know, that's usually what happens. You know, noises like that usually come out of clubhouses. But, look, the Mets have had plenty of terrible teams over the last 10 years and have had good clubhouses. So I think the clubhouse chemistry thing is always overrated. It comes down to what's going on in the field. And, you know, we all work with people that we're not friends with and that we don't like. And there we work with some people that we do like. And there are cliques in very productive companies. And, you know, I think there have been cliques with the Mets, you know, in some of their good years in 2000, you know, the end of 2014, certainly, but 2015, 2016. You know, the one that I think of, you know, right off the bat was the clique that Bartolo Colon created with his with the pitching staff. You know, and those were some good, very good Met teams. So I think a lot, you know, that I think the clubhouse chemistry stuff gets a little overrated.
What's interesting about the Cabrera thing is I do feel like that's blown over, and I feel like he's done a good job putting that fire out himself, saying he's okay at second base now. But what's interesting is the guy goes from saying, please trade me, to both you and I tonight having the possibility in our heads that, hey, they might actually exercise the option on him for next year, and I agree it would be a decent move. I feel like you would have the infield set. And if Rivera's playing third and you got the two kids at first and short, not only is the infield set, but the infield's pretty cheap.
Yeah, and I think a lot rests on TJ Rivera. And I think he's going to be playing third base for the duration here because, like we just said, it checks a lot of the boxes if he can prove that he can do it. Now, if he can't do it, then they have to figure out what to do with TJ Rivera, because his bat plays every day at this level. I think he's shown that. I think he's earned an opportunity to play every day for the club, and they're going to have to find a place for him. And if that place isn't third base, maybe that means they will cut Azrubel after the year or try and trade him this summer, the summer by August 31st, potentially. So we just have to see. I mean, it's going to be spring training for 2 months around here. I think we all agree on that at this point.
So of course the big question is, we have the trading deadline approaching here about, a little more than 2 weeks from now, and a lot of baseball to play in between. In your opinion, who stays, who goes, and more importantly, favorite Barron trade so far?
Well, you know, I've gotten a lot of Barron trades for the Yankees, believe it or not, and a lot of them surround Lucas Suda, which really isn't a surprise because it's a really good fit for the Yankees. The one trade I've heard, which isn't totally unrealistic, except for the fact that I don't think the two teams will make a trade, is Duda and Reed and for Andujar. And I said, you know what, that's not the worst trade in the world. I'd probably want another prospect or request a higher ranked prospect than Andujar. But that's actually a good realistic trade for the Mets to try and shoot for. You know, again, like, you know, maybe get two prospects back for those two players. But, you know, I think that's a good foundation. And I really haven't heard a lot yet. I mean, there's still, 2 weeks before the trade deadline. So there's plenty of time for some ridiculousness out there. But I haven't gotten a lot of ridiculous stuff lately. I've heard a lot of stuff that actually makes some sense, believe, for the first time in 9 years here, you know.
Well, JB and I have talked on the show a lot about, we think that a lot of times Mets fans like to over-evaluate how much of a haul you could get back for certain players. Mm-hmm. And we both agree that Reed's going to get moved, and you'll probably get something kind of decent for Reed, even though he's a rental. But when you look at the position players between Duda, Bruce, Granderson, and Walker, of those four guys, which one do you think might command something decent back for the Mets?
I think Bruce, only because he's been consistent from day one, and he's just put up I think he's on a slightly better pace than he was at this time last year. So I think they can certainly get something back that's better than what they gave up, which is the right call, because I think, you know, if they can move anyone in the next 2 weeks, whether it's one guy or five guys, I think it's always better to get back established prospects or what, however you want to describe that, than getting sandwich picks back for giving qualifying offers. And that's, you know, another part of the equation. I think there are guys that they really need to push to move because there are guys like Granderson, like Lucas Duda, like Addison Reed in particular, who they're not going to make qualifying offers to. So if you're not going to make qualifying offers to guys, you're not going to get anything back for them. So I think it's incumbent upon them to move, to really move those guys and get something for them. But I think Bruce and Reed are the two guys. They're the two obvious guys I would expect they'll be able to move in the next 10 days. I don't think they're going to move all of them. I don't think they can move all of them. I don't think they want to move all of them. But they seem to be the two guys they can market the most. I mean, people are always going to overpay for relievers this time of year, especially even the rentals. You know, I don't think Reed is in the class of a Chapman, so I don't think they'll be able to get back the haul that the Yankees got for him last summer. But they should still be able to get back someone's, you know, 2 through 5 prospect, in my opinion. Probably more towards the back end of that, but that's still not bad for a guy you're not going to make a qualifying offer to. So I would aim for it. I would divest the entire bullpen if I were them and just make that a big project this winter, which they historically haven't been good at. But, you know, I would certainly, when you're rebuilding, when you're retooling, or when you're punting, I should say, there should be no money being spent in the bullpen. I think that's just a common law.
Well, you certainly don't need a closer if you're not going to be winning games. And yeah, you know, the reality
right.
of it is that when you're punting, you're not expecting to win many games at that point. I mean, there's certainly, to me, there's no reason to keep a lot of those guys out there for any length of time. But you look at the Mets and the minor leagues specifically. I mean, even the bullpen sense. I mean, you got Josh Smoker probably coming back this week, who, you know, I think has shown he can be brilliant at times and other times definitely overused. You have guys out there. I mean, like today we're calling up Hansel Robles again. Sometimes you just play the, you know, same card over and over again and hope the house has a different number. But it seems like the massive overhaul needs to be with the bullpen. Although the reality of it is, you know, you and I and everybody else know bullpens are no guaranteed thing. Even if you sign all the best names out there and trade for all the best names, you could wind up with the same exact results next year, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, bullpens are always major crapshoots, and I'm not an advocate of this, but just for the sake of the discussion, you could bring back the entire bullpen as it stands next year intact, and they could be perfectly fine. So I think, though, you know, I mean, yes, the bullpen is a big project, but the elephant in the room really to me is the starting rotation. There are huge, huge question marks, starting with Harvey and ending with, God knows what in that rotation. Right now they don't have very much aside from Jacob DeGrom as far as sort of things. And I think for argument's sake, let's say Noah Syndergaard is fine. You know, they still have to figure out the rest of that rotation. Right now, they don't have a lot of answers, and that's a scary prospect going into next year because, you know, it's not like they're going to be able to invest $100 million in that rotation. You know, do they take the leap and, you know, non-tender Harvey? Would that be something that they consider? There are a lot of questions that they have to answer, and it's a big area of concern going forward because it's not what they expected it to be, and not by a long shot.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think one of the big questions of this offseason is going to be, you know, with this rotation. You know, I was saying earlier to EJ that technically speaking, the way Harvey has gone this year between performance and injury, you're probably saving it. If you keep him around, you're saving quite a bit on arbitration because he's not going to be worth quite as much as he might have been. I mean, there's a lot of questions you have to ask at this point, including the, you know, as much as his market is diminished trade value wise, do you rather than non-tender him, do you go for that change of scenery trade and see if you can get back somebody back who can contribute next year?
Yeah. I mean, I think that it's going to be a topic. If it's not already a topic, I'm not saying they're going to trade him in the next week, but you know, they're clearly thinking about what's next. And specifically with this rotation, which is just a giant mess that they have to fix. And it's always the hardest part of any team to fix because you're always going to overpay for pitching in free agency. And it's why they did what they did, and they cultivated their own, you know, their own staff of quote unquote aces, which, you know, they just kind of, they appear to have flamed out to a large degree. And that's a scary prospect going into next year.
Well, last question for me, and then let you go on with your Sunday, and always appreciate your time, of course. But go for a more lighthearted, a lighthearted question to wrap things up. It concerns a certain former football player in A-ball. The part for me is that I am just kind of humored by the whole thing. Now, don't get me wrong. I have nothing against Tim Tebow, the guy. I think he's got a good work ethic. I think he's a good example for our players. I think he's a good role model. But overall, I'm not sure he's a major league outfielder. But
no,
you know, what is the end game here in your mind? I mean, Sandy said the other day that he's not a consideration for a September call-up. But you know, what do you think the end game is? Do they actually pull another season out of it?
Well, it's always about performance at any level, and it's not as if it would cost them very much to bring him back, you know, as a organizational player next year. I may be in the minority here, but I'm always rooting for the underdog, and I'm rooting for him to be a success story because, you know, I think a lot of the anger directed towards him is jealousy. Like, you know, his name kind of got him this opportunity, but you know what? Good for him. And, you know, it's good for him to live out another, to try and live out another dream and, you know, and make it. You know, I actually hope that he can prove all the naysayers wrong. With that said, of course, you know, I don't think it's realistic to expect that he'll ever make it. I don't think there's any indication that he can be successful for too much longer in the higher ranks of the minor leagues. But, you know, like you said, like, I don't have anything against him. I don't really know what the end game is other than the entertainment. I mean, he's been, the whole thing's been entertaining and fascinating to see and listen to. But, I mean, time will tell. I mean, you'll know in a couple of years, I think, what the actual end game is. He's either going to be here or on another team, or he's going to be on ESPN full time. And, you know, I personally wish him nothing but the best. In a way, I'm jealous. You know, I'm jealous that he's able to have that he can have the opportunity and I can't.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I think that's quintessential Tebow particularly in this situation is the attitude and the passion that he is approaching this with. And like I said, you know, basically being a mentor, you know, to the players around him on how to conduct themselves and how to work, you know, hard at, you know, day in and day out. It really does make him an easy guy to root for. I've kind of said, if you're rooting against him, I kind of just don't like you. Now, if you have the realistic expectation that he's not going to make it, that's one thing. But to actually actively root against the guy, that tends to bug me just a little bit because I don't care who you are. If you're in blue and orange, I'm rooting for the suit. You know, that's kind of my thing. I believe in not rooting against our own players and not wishing them to fail. So, I mean, I'm with you 100%. I think, you know, unlikely he ever makes the big leagues, but hey, if he does, I'll be the first one to root for him. Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah, I'll buy a Tebow jersey. I would be happy to do it if he made it. I think it would be an awesome American story if he could be successful and, you know, put just even see one pitch at Citi Field. I think that would be a great story.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, it is always a pleasure to talk to you, man. I appreciate the time, appreciate the friendship, and appreciate all that you bring. And always good to talk to you, sir.
The same. And I hope we can talk soon. And hopefully about a happier subject with the Mets.
Oh, okay. With the Mets. When you add the proviso with the Mets, it just probably extended how long until we have you back. Sorry. Happier subjects we can come up with. We were talking about Disneyland before you came on. That's happy. But, the happiest place on earth. So, I mean, you know.
Yeah,
well, I appreciate it. We'll talk soon. And, you know, obviously we hope for good things from the Mets.
Yep, definitely.
Well, appreciate each and every one of you tuning in to the Happy Recap Radio Show for my co-host, EJ. We'll be back again next week with more Mets talk, and certainly look forward to the trade deadline and the news that it will bring as we head into the doldrums of August that are likely to come forward, and the dreaded days of September, which don't promise as much excitement as perhaps the last two Septembers have brought. But, we can always see miracles do happen. They've been known to occur to this very team. So we'll certainly keep an optimistic eye out, but realistic as well. I want to thank again Michael Barron for joining us. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at Michael G. Barron. You can find EJ on Twitter at The Happy Recap. You can find me at The Real Hoove. And, of course, you can find us on Facebook. Just look for The Happy Recap, where we have discussions going on 24/7 about the New York Mets. I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in on this Sunday afternoon and those listening later on to the podcast. Until next time, let's go Mets!